That's a message from the United States Elections Assistance Commission. Tatova Andrea Wang, our next guest here, speaking out, I believe, for the first time, certainly, on live broadcast radio since she has been ungagged by the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, for whom she was commissioned to write a report on voter fraud, a report that, well, the Republicans amongst that Elections Assistance Commission apparently didn't care for. Tova Andrea Wang is a democracy fellow at the Century Foundation and a nationally known expert on election reform, executive director of the Century Foundation's post-2004 election reform working group, author of several election reform reports, and her commentary on this subject has appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, National Journal, Associated Press, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Minneapolis Star Tribune, and all campaigns and elections in all manner of other places. She has been gagged and not allowed to speak about the way the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission took her report on voter ID. When they didn't like the findings, they buried it. Then, when people complained about it, they altered it and finally released it, but without letting her know it was being altered. Changed all kinds of things to say exactly what Tova Wang didn't believe in the first place, and then they gagged her for non-disclosure reasons. She was not allowed to speak. It took months before she was finally given the dispensation to do so. She joins us tonight for the first time to speak about exactly what this EAC bunch did. Tova Wang, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thanks so much. And just to clarify, the report that we did, and I did it with a co-author who was a very specifically chosen Republican,
mm-hmm.
was actually a report on voter fraud and voter intimidation. And the voter ID report actually was a whole separate report that they sat on.
Oh, did I say voter ID? Okay.
We'll talk about that tomorrow night.
You're right, and we will. And you're absolutely right. And the two things do sort of go together. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute. But the voter fraud and intimidation report. And your co-author there on this report was Job Sebarov. Am I saying his name right?
Sebarov. Right.
I always get it wrong. And he is a Republican, correct?
He is, and in fact was very active in the Republican Party and part of the Republican ballot security teams in Arkansas. So, you know, clearly he and I didn't always see completely eye to eye on everything, but we actually were able to work very well together as time went on and jointly came out with this draft report for the commission, which apparently they didn't take a liking to.
Yeah, I can't imagine why. Well, what were the findings here in general that, what did you find, and then we'll find what they didn't like about it?
Yeah, I mean, just to make it a real short summary, because it was a very detailed report and went on for pages and pages. I mean, we found, after interviewing dozens of experts in the field and election administrators and academics, going through just years and years of articles off of Nexus and then doing and follow-up articles and reading all of the existing literature on this topic and going over cases, we found that the incidence of fraud at the polling place in terms of voter impersonation was very rare and that the allegations of it were pretty overstated. In fact, of the two dozen interviews that we did do with experts and elections officials across the ideological spectrum, only one person argued to us that voter fraud at the polls was the major problem we confronted in our voting process and was sort of this epidemic.
Only one person of all of the experts and everything you went to, only a single person was willing to make that claim to you?
Yes, and you, Brad, in particular, will love who it was. It was Jason Torchinsky from the American Center for Voting Rights. In addition, we said the voter intimidation was still a major problem, including things like challengers at the polls, which, you know, I think you've been talking a little bit about, direct intimidation, especially, say, in Native American communities, we discovered this sort of thing. We found that there were a number of structural problems, of course, that led to fraud and intimidation. And we also found that people were not too happy with the Department of Justice and how they were handling the issues of voter fraud and voter intimidation, and that, you know, we might do well to take a look at how the Department of Justice is handling these cases and whether the laws need to be changed or the Department of Justice, you know, re-examine their priorities and so on.
like the Department of Justice is going to even listen to that. I mean, they have been making prosecution of voter fraud that's what this whole U.S. attorney purge was about. They don't care about what the facts really are. They're pushing voter fraud come hell or high water, and it seems like they wanted a report from the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission that would essentially give them the political wherewithal or the more political propaganda to put out there to say that voter fraud is a massive epidemic. We got to do something about it. Is that the sense that you got? Were you ever given any marching orders along those lines from the EAC?
No. In fact, the interesting thing to me about all of this in a lot of ways is that during the entire process during which we were working on this report, we worked very closely with the staff of the Election Assistance Commission, and the commissioners of the commission also were constantly informed about exactly what we were doing, the kinds of findings we were coming out with, the research we were doing, and nobody had any problem with it, actually, that was expressed to us, except on a few details that we worked out.
Right.
But in general, no one objected to it. No one said we were doing stuff that we certainly weren't supposed to be doing or be going beyond the scope of our contract, which they're claiming now. And then we submitted our report in July of 2006, and we're literally actively barred from the EAC staff from ever having anything to do with it again.
They refused
to let us see what they were doing to it. They refused to let us work with them on any concerns that they had or revisions they wanted to make. We were completely shut out.
After you had put in your draft report, right?
Exactly. And then without really even telling me, in December of 2006, conveniently after the election, they came out with their report, which they were entitled to do legally. They could do whatever they wanted. They owned the research, and I signed a contract to that effect. But what they came out with, and they used our names, was really not at all resembling what we had given to them in July. So that was quite troubling.
And yet your name stayed on the report as the authors at that point?
The cover page of the report does not say our names, but it says in the first page or two of the report, this is all based on the work done by myself and Job. So I was very troubled, but as you referred to, I wasn't allowed, because of my contract, to say anything about it to anybody.
Well, you can talk about it now, and we're going to take a quick break here and come back with much more from Tova Andrea Wang on this incredible voter fraud report and the EAC's burying of it and the gag order that she received. Not allowed to talk about it. Much more ahead in your calls here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Stay with us.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, doing double duty this week, sitting in for Peter B. as his guest host. Happy to be here. We're speaking with Tova Andrea Wang in her first live broadcast interview since being released from her non-disclosure contract after the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, the EAC, gamed her report, buried it, then altered it, gamed it, and then kept her from speaking about it. And Tova, earlier I actually confused it with the voter ID report, and I think it's we need to make people understand why this is important and why the folks, these various GOP operatives out there. You mentioned the American Center for Voting Rights, one of the top snake oil salesmen when it comes to selling this notion of an epidemic of voter fraud. The reason they're doing it is so that they can then encourage the idea of voter ID, more restrictive voter ID, photo ID laws at the polling place. Is that a correct assessment?
That's how my sense of it is. You know, apart from even just doing the EAC report, having worked on this continuously and vigorously since the 2000 election on this issue.
Sure.
That is my sense, that, everywhere you go, where these very restrictive voter ID laws are passed, is completely along partisan lines, almost, you know, exactly on partisan lines,
mm-hmm.
very racially divided. And I don't think it's an accident. I think that, unfortunately, the Republican Party knows that the people who are less likely to have the kind of voter ID that they're demanding in order to be able to exercise the right to vote, the people who are less likely to have it are people who are thought of, at least, as tending Democratic, minorities, poorer people, people who move around a lot, students, older people. And
people who tend to vote any particular way?
I'm saying they tend to vote Democratic.
Yep.
yeah, so it's just it's a little hard to believe that that's not at least part of the motive, although there may be some of them believe that this polling place voter fraud really is this sort of stealth, under-the-radar huge problem, but, you know, it's just there's zero evidence that that's the case.
Well, you know, you raise a good question. Are these real believers? You mentioned, of all the experts you talked to, only Jason Torchinsky of the, reprehensible phony GOP front group, American Center for Voting Rights, only he was willing to come out and say, oh, no, voter fraud is much, much worse. Does he believe it? Do the people that you talk to that actually buy into it, do they believe it, or do they know what they're doing is running a scam here, Tova?
You know, I really hate to ascribe motives. I mean, you know, I just sort of let people's actions speak for themselves. I will note one other interesting aspect of that, though, is that Thor Hearn, the head of the American Center for Voting Rights, was on our bipartisan working group, the EAC, in order to make doubly, triply sure that this was not tainted by any kind of partisanship, in addition to having bipartisan authors of the report, insisted mm-hmm. very strongly that we have a bipartisan, and strongly bipartisan, meaning people who are very strong on either side, working group to advise us on the direction of our research. And we had a lengthy meeting with this group in May of 2006. And as I say, Thor Hearn was a member of that working group as requested by Job Sarabrov. And the transcript is available now publicly. And you'll see that he really didn't raise any objections to anything that we were saying.
Thor Hearn did not?
Everything we were saying was pretty much what ended up in our draft report.
So Thor Hearn did not raise any objections when you guys were discussing this report?
That's right. He only later raised objections in the news media when the status report that became controversial came out in USA Today in October. But at the time, there was only one person on the working group who really had any serious concerns about anything we were doing, and that was Secretary of State Todd Rokita of Indiana.
Indiana, right.
The state with, you know, probably the most restrictive voter ID law. Who I later found out not only emailed the EAC trying to object to my participation in this project, the participation of a Republican notwithstanding, but actually did not believe that the EAC had the statutory authority to even conduct the project, which is a little odd because it's actually required to do so under
yeah.
the Help America Vote Act that created the agency.
To create these reports. So Rokita, actually, what did he say to object to you?
Oh, I mean, you know, and he wasn't the only one. I mean, Hans von Spakovsky, who some of your listeners may have heard about, who
yes.
was at the Department of Justice at the time in the voting section, who is now a recess appointee to the Federal Election Commission and is in the process of having his confirmation, nomination confirmed now by the Senate.
Or not.
Also wrote
right.
a very lengthy email complaining about my being involved in this project, saying that I was obviously partisan and had written all sorts of things that, you know, were objectionable. And, you know, it was discredit to the EAC to have me working on this.
Okay, let me figure this out then. Since you mentioned Hans von Spakovsky, Tova Wang, and just to give the quickest of examples here, the original report that you guys submitted to the EAC said, and the EAC, by the way, is four presidential appointees, theoretically two from the Republicans, two from the Democrats, but the original report that you put in said there is widespread but not unanimous agreement that there is little polling place fraud. Now, when the final version came out of the report, after they had altered it, it said, there is a great deal of debate on the pervasiveness of fraud.
Right, yeah.
Completely changed
the
meaning.
That's a key graph that everyone's been picking up on for obvious reasons.
Okay, so if they weren't complaining about it, Tova, to you when you were keeping the EAC up to date on what was going on, if there was no real complaints other than, you know, Jason Torchinsky, he was the only guy from ACVR who disagreed, what happened between the time you put in this report thinking all was well? Did you not?
I did. I didn't know because they wouldn't talk to me about it. There are emails now in the public domain that demonstrate that I was constantly, from August through December, trying to get in touch with all sorts of people at the EAC to try and find out, A, what was going on with the report, because obviously, I mean, it was obvious to me that it was going to become a political problem for them more than anybody if they sat on it too long and didn't act on it, and B, what they were doing with it if they were actually working on it. And basically, they refused to work with me and refused to let me see anything that they were doing. I was sort of completely hamstrung.
I have argued, and I believe our reporting at bradblog.com has backed up this case, that the EAC itself is impossibly compromised at this point, certainly when it was being run by Paul DiGregorio, who was the chair while you were working on it, for the bulk of the time you were working on this report.
I actually want to disagree with that a little bit.
Sure.
I actually think we need an institution like the EAC. But the problem is the way they're being run right now. And I think that, you and I have talked about this. I don't know what went on with this, and I don't know who was responsible for it. But I really believe we need an institution that can be a place where a clearinghouse for honest research, a place where states can get guidance on how they should best conduct their elections. We need an entity that does give out advice on how to improve our voting system. It's just not working the way they're doing it now. They need greater transparency. They can't be stifling the findings of reports that they hire experts to gather.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not saying the EAC as a concept is no good. I'm saying that this group has become compromised. They're secretive. They don't release information. And frankly, I've done a lot of reporting on them. Tova, they don't tell the truth.
Well, I mean, honestly, my biggest hope is that out of all of this will come an institution that is reformed and is stronger after all of this has gone on.
Well, how do you explain that they would not allow you to speak for so many months? How many months are we talking about now between the time you released the report and the time?
Well, the whole time I was working on the report, too. So almost 2 years.
Well, fair enough, though. You're working on it. They want to keep it quiet until your report comes out. Once it comes out, what was the reason they gave you for shutting up for the past 6 months? They wouldn't let you speak about it.
Well, I mean, and they're right in a sense. I signed a contract that has a confidentiality provision in it that says that they own the research and I, cannot speak about it. And, perhaps I was naive in signing this contract. I never imagined in a million years that this would all go down the way it did. And immediately after they did release the report, I requested that I be able to speak about it. And I ended up actually very fortunately getting a pro bono attorney. Let me give a shout out to him, James Joseph from Arnold and Porter, who was instrumental in working with me and writing letters to the EAC and getting them finally to release the documents. And, of course, there was tremendous pressure coming from Congress as well to release all the documents regarding this and for them to let me speak out. Their position now basically is, well, we've released all these documents, so, everything's out there so you can talk pretty much. But
it took them, Tova, and you're much kinder than me. It took them how many months between the time they released their report, December 06, right?
Oh, right, six months. And first of all, after our initial letter to them, they took 2 full months to even acknowledge that first letter requesting that I be ungagged, and then sent us back a 1 or 2 paragraph letter, which apparently took them 2 months to write. So that was the first thing.
And I want to shout out to...
They came up with different reasons for why I couldn't speak. I mean, the final one was kind of funny because they said the reason that I had been prohibited from speaking is that I was a federal employee. And as a federal employee, I couldn't make public disclosures about the work, which is really funny because I don't remember getting anything but a 1099 form from them. And in fact, they've acknowledged that. So to say I was a federal employee was just weird.
Weird indeed. Let's take a quick call here. Give us a call if you like, 888-5-PETER-B to speak with Tova Wang. John in Germantown, Wisconsin, welcome to the PBC show. Question for Tova?
Well, it sounds like she answered my question. I was going to ask if, when did you sign the non-disclosure agreement? Was after you agreed to work for him? And then did you realize its scope and nature? And it sounds like the answer to the second part is no.
At the time, it seemed to me, and I guess I'm in a way a little bit embarrassed now because I went to law school. I've never practiced, but I am an attorney. I assumed that it was sort of a very normal kind of clause, and it really kind of was, that said that this is sort of a kind of work for hire where the research belonged to them. And I didn't have a problem with that. It never dawned on me that they would come out with something that I have, you know, be so troubled by that this would end up in this kind of a conflict. So, I mean, that's kind of the best answer I can give.
So you knew you were not going to be able to speak about the report once it came out, or did you presume that once the study came out, you would get to talk about it?
No, I knew I couldn't, because we had had conversations during the report, because as I've mentioned, I'm someone who works on this issue as well as many other voting rights issues.
Right.
That's my job at the Century Foundation, and so I, you know, speak to the press a lot. And during the election in particular, I was being asked questions by, you know, any number of media, and I went to them saying, you know, can I talk about this? Can I talk to them? And they, you know, they told me I couldn't even before they put out their version of the report. So I knew that, and you know, like I said, I was able to get a terrific pro bono attorney, and that was very useful.
But it took
Congress stepped in.
It took months, and it was only really after Rosemary Rodriguez joined the EAC that she began to speak up and make some noise on your behalf as one of the new commissioners. And even then, the rest of the commission seems like they took months before they responded.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And, I don't know what went on behind closed doors. I mean, I also have to acknowledge that, you know, a number of members of Congress also were quite upset about all of this. Zoe Lofgren and Maurice Hinchey and a number of others also were making demands of Senator Feinstein and Durbin on the Senate side. So they definitely were under a lot of pressure. And fortunately now they've changed their position on it.
All right, we're going to be back with our few remaining minutes with Tova Andrea Wang speaking out for the first time about the voter fraud report that the EAC gamed. You're listening to Brad Friedman on the Peter B. Collins Show. Tova Andrea Wang is our guest here for the last few minutes of the Peter B. Collins Show, Democracy Fellow at the Century Foundation. Author of the Gamed Voter Fraud Report. It wasn't game when she turned it in, but by the time the EAC, U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, turned it out, it was gamed indeed. One of the other anomalies reported by the Times, the difference between her original report said there was evidence of some continued outright intimidation and suppression of voters by local officials, especially in American Indian communities. The final report, however, says that voter intimidation is also a topic of some debate, because there is little agreement concerning what constitutes actionable voter intimidation. If they were going to make their own report, Tova Wang, why wouldn't they just write what they wanted to in the first place? And do you know who it was who changed the text of your report to what they eventually got here?
Well, to the first part of your question, I have very long now wondered if they were just going to write their own report, why they hired us and why they paid us, using taxpayer dollars, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding from the emails that were released is that it seems that the primary person who was responsible for the drafting of the EAC's report was Julie Thompson Hodgkins, the general counsel at the EAC, who is a Republican, although she's not a political appointee, but she is a Republican.
Well, she was working, or somebody was working for somebody, because you turned this in and things were supposed to be fine. What did you think when you saw this report when it came out? What was your feeling when they finally released it this way?
Again, I'm probably, in fairness, I actually had the feeling, obviously, that something was going on when they refused to talk to me for 6 months.
Okay, but here's another example. Original report said false registration forms have not resulted in polling place fraud. Then their version of your report comes out and says registration drives by non-governmental groups are a source of fraud.
Yeah, that actually really annoyed me. I mean, I was pretty horrified back in December, and it's funny because it really took the U.S. attorneys scandal for people to start paying attention to what had gone on with the EAC, because at the time, you know, a few groups like People for the American Way and Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights were onto this, it didn't get a lot of attention, and I couldn't say anything, and so it was uncomfortable.
I can only imagine how frustrating. Let's sneak in a quick call here. Bob Bancroft, actually, from Voters Unite, you got a question for Tova Wang, and welcome to the PBC show, Bob.
Thank you, Brad. And thank you, Tova, for taking some time to talk to all of us about this. It's just so illuminating, and I think it's really appreciated.
Thank you.
My question was, do you know what the original genesis or impetus for the report was? Was this one of the things that HAVA tasked EAC to do, or was there?
Yeah, exactly. It's in the HAVA legislation that they're supposed to study this issue. But I want to, that brings me to another point, actually, which is what it says in HAVA is that the Election Assistance Commission is to study and do a report on voter fraud and voter intimidation. Well, before you even read the report that the EAC released in December, you could see that something was amiss because it was no longer called a report on voter fraud and voter intimidation.
That's right.
In fact, it was now called election crimes,
yep,
which tremendously narrows, greatly narrows the scope of what you're going to be looking at. It completely excludes the possibility of looking at acts that have the effect of committing, of being a fraud or intimidating or suppressing voters, that either come under the civil, come under civil litigation, or are not, as of now, part of the criminal code, or not right now criminal acts under the criminal code, but maybe should be.
When I
You know, right off the bat, they had taken off the table things like challenges to minority voters, things like, you know, groups putting what appear to be armed guards in front of the polling places, deceptive practices, the phony flyers going out to people.
I think they knew that voter fraud in and of itself as a phrase had already become so discredited as a GOP scam that they decided to conflate them all into one big pot of election crimes.
Well, I think it actually allowed them to so narrow the scope of what they were going to look at,
mm-hmm,
that they didn't have to deal with all these, you know, annoying little voter intimidation problems that currently, at least, are not being adequately dealt with by the law. They don't want to look at that. They want to look at things that are already under the criminal code. For example, in order to charge someone criminally for voter intimidation, there has to be some kind of physical or financial coercion. And it was my proposition that maybe we wanted to look at broadening the scope of that so that you could criminally prosecute people for doing other things that did not involve physical or economic coercion. But you can cut that out if that no longer, if you're only looking at what is currently under the criminal code.
Well, Tova Andrea Wang, thank you for joining us here. Actually, give me 15 seconds just on this is a scam as far as I'm concerned, as far as the Republicans go. Is this a scam to keep people from voting as far as you see across the GOP in general?
Well, I mean, you know, getting away from the report, because, again, I don't know. I don't have a smoking gun that tells me exactly what went on there. But looking at all of the evidence as a whole over the last several years and the pushing of the voter ID, I think it is quite evident, just looking at the facts, that they have been pushing this notion of polling place fraud and using it to enact stringent voter ID laws and others that would restrict third-party registrations and so on, in order to exclude certain categories of voters. I think that's clear.
And just to be clear, those categories are Democrats. Okay.
They do tend to be.
Yes, they do. Tova Andrea Wang, thank you so much for speaking up, for joining us, for doing all you've been doing on this topic, and for the courage to fight back against these guys. I really appreciate it, Tova.
Thank you.
Tova Andrea Wang from the Century Foundation. You can read much more over there at the Century. Oh, we don't have the Century Foundation. TCF.org. Check out her work over there. We'll have we've got a lot. Search Brad blog for Tova Wang. We've got a lot of thoughts, including guest blogs from Tova. All right, we've got to get out of here. We've got one more broadcast tomorrow. We will be back for that. Do I have time to thank everyone? To thank all my guests. Faz Shakir, Christina Johnson, Tracy Fleischman, Scott Dick, Tova Andrea Wang, John Gideon. I'm told we may have Greg Palace tomorrow, Deborah Bowen if we're lucky. A lot more. Katrina Rill, thank you for producing up at the Mothership, along with engineer Brian Urban, Desi Doyen here in the studio, Agent 99 for holding down fort at bradblog.com. Odie McClay and all the great folks here at KPFT for letting us ruin the joint.